At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Poor Mary Toft, her judgment was off, or perhaps she thought it'd be funny. The doctors were men, shocked again and again, each time she gave birth to a bunny. Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. I'm no pregnancy expert, but I am a doula, and I have been pregnant twice and given birth once. I've also taken Human Reproduction 101, so I like to think I have a pretty good understanding of what all goes on in there. The subjects of today's episode may not have had the luxury of a formal education, or, for those who did, they lived in a time in which people still believed women's body parts picked up and hitchhiked around their bodies willy-nilly, so I suppose a certain amount of ignorance was forgivable. But it's hard to imagine how, even with just a rudimentary understanding of biology, the folks in today's story allowed themselves to be swept up into a ruse as improbable as Mary Toft and her rabbit babies. And just a warning before we jump in, this story is pretty gross. As per usual, I won't be overly graphic or disgusting, but if you're a fan of baby bunnies, I urge you to proceed with caution. Mary Denyer was born into hard times. It was the early 18th century in Surrey, about 30 miles from central London, and things were not easy for the laboring class. Can you imagine? By the time she was 24 in 1726, Mary was married to Joshua Toft, whose profession is described by an entry on the Grub Street Project website as a journeyman clothier, which I can only assume means he made clothes for people who traveled a lot, or he traveled a lot selling his clothes. It doesn't matter. Mary was working as a servant and had at least two living children, though one account says she had at least three children, only one of which was still alive by 1726. Mary supplemented the household income by working for local farms, earning a penny a day. Look, I'm not even going to bother to calculate that into today money, but I'm willing to bet at least a penny that a penny a day was not really anything to live on. Like I said, times were tough. As with any story from this long ago, accounts differ. In some accounts, in August of that year, Mary suffered a miscarriage, possibly not her first. The miscarriage, she said, was brought on when she was startled by a rabbit, ironically while chasing rabbits out in a field for food. Must have been a scary rabbit. Other accounts say she was weeding a field when she simply came across a rabbit, and that triggered an insatiable craving for rabbit. The craving was insatiable, I guess, because she was so poor she couldn't afford rabbit meat, which highlights how poor she must have been, considering that rabbits are infamously abundant wherever they go. It's kind of their brand. Anyway, whatever the reason, Mary had rabbits on the brain. About a month later, on September 27th, Mary started experiencing what she said felt like labor pains, even though, as far as anyone knew, she was not pregnant. Some neighbors arrived, along with her mother-in-law, Anne, who happened to be a midwife, to find Mary had given birth to something. It definitely wasn't human. According to a piece by Nikki Russell for the Public Domain Review, quote, she gave birth to something resembling a liverless cat. End quote. Now, listen, I don't know how it was determined that the cat, or whatever it was liverless. I highly doubt they did an autopsy right there on the spot, but I suppose, to be fair, the cat, or whatever it was, being liverless is probably not the point. The point was, it definitely and without question was not a human baby. The piece continues, quote, "The family decided to call on the help of Guilford obstetrician John Howard. He visited Mary the next day, where he was presented with more animal parts, which Ann Toft said she had taken from Mary during the night. The following day, Howard returned and helped deliver yet more animal parts," end quote. Some accounts claim that Mary gave birth to 9 dead rabbits over the course of one day. According to Howard's own journal entries, he believed that Mary was actually birthing these dead animals and dead animal parts. And, like, sure, I think we have every right to be like, seriously, dude, you're a midwife? But stories of women giving birth to so-called monstrous babies were a thing back then. In an award-winning undergrad research paper titled Rabbits and Hogs and Bears, Oh My, Monstrous Births and Control Over Pregnant Bodies, Elizabeth Klein highlights medical papers written by actual medical doctors from the 17th and 18th centuries in which are accounts of women giving birth to babies with various defects because of their own moral failings or overactive imaginations. One doctor claimed a woman gave birth to a baby covered in hair because she looked at a painting of a bear during the act of conception. Another woman gave birth to a baby with a pig's snout because she had refused to give money to a beggar woman. The beggar woman cursed the stingy pregnant lady's womb. This last one is particularly interesting, seeing as how poverty was considered, and still is, a moral failing on the part of the person experiencing it. If you're poor, it's because of your own laziness. But here, conveniently, I suppose, the pregnant lady is supposed to help out the lazy poor person because greed is worse than sloth? Listen, I don't know. The mental gymnastics people do to make women feel shitty about themselves is too much for me to try to untangle right now. The point is, the idea that women could give birth to babies covered in hair or with pig snouts because of their own moral failings was generally accepted in the medical world because girls are gross and they have cooties and circle, circle, dot, dot, now I have the cootie shot, no take backsies. Strangers, if you're looking for digestive support, Ritual has got your back, or rather, your biome, with Symbiotic Plus, a 3-in-1 powerhouse of clinically studied pre, pro, and postbiotics to support a balanced gut microbiome with daily use. These little minty pills that don't need refrigeration are built to withstand the harsh conditions of your upper GI tract so they can deliver their goods right to your gut where you need them. Plus, they're vegan-friendly and formulated without GMOs, major allergens, animal products, shady fillers, and artificial colors. Ritual with Symbiotic Plus helps me feel and look less bloated so I can go about my day without feeling like a gassy lead balloon. So get your gut going. Support a balanced gut microbiome with Ritual Symbiotic Plus. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/strange. That's ritual.com/strange for 25% off your first month. In 1724, a Scottish man midwife published The Female Physician, in which he warned, quote, "Whence is it, then, that we have so many deformed persons, crooked bodies, ugly aspects, distorted mouths, wry noses, and the like in all countries, but from the imagination of the mother?" End quote. And the ancient Greek philosopher Empedocles warned, quote, "For often women have fallen in love with statues of men and with images and have produced offspring which resemble them," end quote. Man, we can't do anything right. A similar case was reported in 1569 involving Agnes Bowker, a young servant in Leicestershire, who allegedly gave birth to a cat, a claim so alarming that it was investigated by the Archdeacon of Leicester. Listen, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. You English people put way too many letters in your words. The case was recorded in both ecclesiastical records and popular pamphlets. The event was ultimately dismissed as a fraud, but not before it sparked intense local scrutiny and accusations of sorcery. And also, as we all know, just because something is exposed as a fraud doesn't mean there aren't plenty of people who continue to believe in its veracity. So Howard was probably like, this woman is giving birth to dead rabbits because she obviously did something morally reprehensible, such as being too poor to even afford rabbit meat. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Or some such garbage. Howard was indeed so convinced that Mary was expelling dead animal parts from her womb that by October, while it was still unbelievably going on, he sent word out for other physicians in the area to come see for themselves and get their hands up in Mary's business. And come they did. But it wasn't just local medical so-and-sos. Howard also wrote to the king and was like, bro, you have to see this. Obviously, King George I wasn't about to make that trip. He was too busy trying to colonize America, but he sent two representatives of the royal court to investigate. Nathaniel St. Andre, the Swiss-born surgeon anatomist to the king, and Samuel Molyneux, the secretary to the Prince of Wales. It was now November, and despite having expelled the first specimen way back in September, luckily for the king's men, Mary was still at it. Upon their arrival, Mary was in labor with yet another rabbit. They witnessed Mary deliver several more dead rabbits, bringing the count to 15 at that point, in their presence. Molyneux was apparently dubious and conducted rudimentary autopsies on the rabbit carcasses, and wouldn't you know it, the lungs did not inflate when submerged in water, which meant the rabbits never breathed air, which of course meant they were dead on arrival. Of course, I suppose if you're willing to suspend disbelief enough to even for one second believe that this whole thing was real, you could believe that the baby animals that came out of this woman's womb had been alive but died at some point before exiting her vagina and having the opportunity to breathe air. But Molyneux was like, I don't think so. St. Andre, though, was convinced Mary and her dead fur babies were the real deal, which is crazy because he was a doctor and the other guy was not. St. Andre even published a pamphlet in which he explained that Mary's dream of rabbits and incessant craving for rabbit meat was likely the cause of her delivering rabbits. So good old King George I, hearing the conflicting opinions, sent a third person to check it out. Dr. Cyriacus Allers arrived in late November to examine Mary. He watched Mary and a few more miracle births and did a more thorough autopsy, through which he found corn, hay, and straw in the digestive tract of one of Mary's dead rabbit babies. It's one thing to argue that a baby didn't breathe air. It's quite another to show that a baby ate food while it was allegedly inside a womb. Back in London on November 21, 1726, Ehlers presented the king with the damning evidence. Ehlers believed Mary and John Howard were both perpetrating a hoax, and he let George I know. By now, Mary's story was making waves, so now instead of just letting the whole thing drop, the king was like, bring her to me! So they brought her to a private bathhouse in London so she could be under constant observation. Why she wasn't brought to a hospital or at least a physician's home, I have no idea. At any rate, spectators and medical men crowded into her room, including reputable figures like Sir Richard Manningham and Dr. James Douglas. Douglas was the first to officially describe the peritoneal folds and spaces within the pelvic cavity, including the area that would be his namesake in his paper, A Description of the Peritoneum and of that part of the membrana cellularis which lies on its outside, with an account of the true situation of all the abdominal viscera. Listen, I don't know what any of that means, except that there's a part in our butts named Douglas or something. Honestly, not sure that's a distinction I would want as a medical professional, but to each their own. Several other anatomical terms are associated with his name, reflecting his extensive work in mapping the female pelvic region. One Lord Hervey wrote, quote, "All the eminent physicians, surgeons, and man midwives in London are there day and night to watch her next production," end quote. Don't even get me started on man midwives. I am not going to go on a rant about people specializing in parts they don't own. I am not going to point out that man gynecologists are why, to this day, cervix-owning folks are forced to endure incredible pain for procedures that they could easily be anesthetized for. Nor will I bloviate about how many deaths at childbirth could have been avoided if women had been believed about their pain. I'm not going to, and you can't make me. That being said, I suppose we owe a debt of gratitude to the men who, for whatever reason, decided to make female anatomy their area of study, because Lord knows women weren't allowed to study or practice formal medicine, and so if it weren't for these dudes, we wouldn't know what we do know about everything that goes on down there, even if most laymen still don't know where the clit is. We might not even know about the clit at all were it not for male doctors slicing us open and writing papers about it. To be clear, of course, I'm not discounting the millions of women who treated and attended to women since the beginning of humankind. You know how they say sex work is the oldest profession? It's actually midwifery. Midwifery is the oldest profession, and it was largely practiced by women until men decided it hurt their feelings to have women practice medicine or generally do anything outside of the home. So, there was plenty of collective knowledge and understanding about female anatomy and pregnancy and labor before men midwives came along and went, "Tut tut, what could a woman possibly know about uteruses? Why, everyone knows their uteruses are constantly wandering around all over the place. It takes a man to trap it and study it." Anyway. Oddly, once under round-the-clock observation in London, Mary failed to produce any more rabbits. She did, however, continue to have fits of pain and went through the motions of labor without result. Tensions began to rise among the observing physicians. Somehow, some of these guys, who were, let me remind you, medical professionals, remained open to the possibility of a miracle. I don't understand most religious things, so I don't know why a woman delivering dead animals and animal parts would be considered a miracle. It sounds like the very definition of a fucking hellscape nightmare. Other medical professional witnesses grew increasingly skeptical. One such skeptic was Sir Richard Manningham, a prominent physician and man midwife in London. Also, just FYI, they called themselves man midwives. That's not me trying to be salty. Manningham had come up to see Mary for himself before she'd been moved down to London. He apparently witnessed her giving birth to what he described as a hog's bladder. And if that's not bad enough, it's possible it was an inflated animal bladder containing several dead rabbits in it. So I guess it would look like she gave birth to a sack full of rabbits? I don't know if she thought that would somehow be more convincing than expelling the parts individually. Anyway, Sir Manningham was like, "Not today, Bob," but he largely kept his suspicion to himself for the time being. He wanted more proof before exposing Mary as a fraud. More proof, I guess, than the small mountain of completely impossible dead animals and animal parts that had already collected at her bedside. It should come as absolutely no surprise that Mary got really sick. Regardless of whether she was sticking these dead animals and dead animal parts up her hoo-ha, or they had somehow miraculously ended up in there, I would imagine anyone performing the motions of labor for as long as she had been would be, at the very least, exhausted. And obviously, having those kinds of things inside one's body, I'm sure, would make anyone sick. So, Mary was sick and continuing to labor at the bathhouse full of man midwives when, in November, a porter was discovered ferreting in a package he seemed extra careful to conceal. According to a book from 2009 called The Curious Case of Mary Toft, quote, "He confessed to Douglas and Manningham that Margaret Toft, Mary's sister-in-law, had asked him to procure the smallest rabbit he could find, end quote. So once word got around of the very suspicious delivery of a small dead baby rabbit to Mary's laboring quarters in the bathhouse, Manningham and Douglas took charge. They asked Mary about the package and she denied any knowledge of it. She was, however, formally arrested on December 4th and taken to prison. On December 7th, after failing to get a confession from Mary, Manningham and Douglas were like, okay, well, here's the deal. It's not normal for a human lady to be delivering rabbits and bladders and liverless cats and such, and so we're going to have to cut you open and check you out. Don't forget, please, that these kinds of surgeries were done without anesthesia. And at this, Mary was like, right, no, this was a hoax. LOL, ha ha ha. But no one was LOLing. Strangers, ever wake up sweaty, freezing, or just uncomfortable? The temperature in your bedroom can make or break your sleep. That's why I love my Miracle-Made sheets. They're inspired by NASA technology and use silver-infused, temperature-regulating fabric to help you sleep perfectly all night long. Listen, I don't need any help not sleeping, so any help I can get to keep me asleep is welcome. And I don't know how they do it, but our Miracle-Made sheets keep both me and my husband comfortable even though he sleeps cold and I sleep hot. Don't ask me how. What do I look like? A NASA scientist? Plus, the silver-infused fabric prevents almost 100% of bacteria growth, which is good because apparently conventional sheets can harbor as much bacteria as a toilet seat. Do you want to sleep on a toilet seat? I don't think so. These sheets feel just as good, if not better, than the sheets that you're going to find at a 5-star hotel, but without the steep price tag. Upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest. Go to trymiracle.com/strange to try Miracle-Made sheets today. You'll save over 40%. And when you use promo code STRANGE, you'll get an extra 20% off plus a free 3-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift, and with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk. That's trymiracle.com/strange, code STRANGE at checkout. Thanks to Miracle-Made for sponsoring this episode. Upon threat of major surgery, Mary produced a confession that began with, "I will not go any longer thus. I shall sooner hang myself." Okay, the confession is in old-timey English and was given by an illiterate, uneducated woman, so it is a little hard to navigate, and I'll do my best to translate. Basically, Mary describes what must have been a truly horrific miscarriage. She called it a true monstrous birth. In this account, she describes miscarrying for at least 3 weeks. She clearly did not know how to identify what was coming out of her. She describes a lot of flooding, which I assume means blood. She claims to have missed a day's work, which she really couldn't afford. Mary describes more than 3 weeks of debilitating pain, during which, at times, she could barely walk. She then describes basically expelling various parts of a human baby. Listen, I'm no doctor, but I'm relatively certain one does not miscarry separate parts. She says, "But in the meantime, pains growing stronger, the midwife took the underjaw away. Mr. Howard came about 4 next morning, who took away both sides of the cheek and the skull. He saw there was nothing more to come away but the neck. After he had looked all the pieces over carefully, all the things he put up in spirits and left them with me." Unless we're all wrong about the way fetuses develop, I'm pretty sure this is impossible. Okay, so then Mary introduces some woman who's a traveling scissor and knife sharpener. Mary recounted the past few weeks' horror to the scissor lady and somehow got into talking about how poor she was, unclear. And the scissor lady was like, "I know a way for you to get enough money that you'll never have to worry about money again." And look, I'm going to warn you again, this is pretty gross, and if you need to skip ahead, you should skip to about 22 minutes and 47 seconds. "She told me that she would get a rabbit, and I asked what I was to do with it, and she told me that I should put it up in my body. I told her that such a thing could not be done, and she said it could and desired to try. She fetched a rabbit, which was a little bigger than a sidling rabbit of a night old. She stripped it wholly and tried to put it up whole, which I told her I was not able to bear it. It was like to kill me and that I would not do it. Then she pulled out again and said she would cut it. She cut it with her scissors and screwed the bones round, having cut it in two pieces only. Then she first put up one part, and upon examining again, found it would hold the other part also, which she likewise put and desired her to keep it as long as I could, and then sent for Mr. Howard, who came and took it all away, first the two pieces, and then the skin, which had been thrust up first. He said he had never seen any such thing before in his whole life. I mean, yeah. Okay, so the scissors lady convinced Mary that she needed to continue doing this, putting rabbit parts up her and giving birth to them, in order to be believed. I asked how many that was, and she said some had 10 and some had 13. She said, I must go through it now I had begun. Besides, I was afraid that Mr. Howard would find it out and that I should be ruined. Listen, I don't know if this means she had 13 rabbits in her or she would need to do this whole performance 13 times in order for it to be believable. Then she described a few days of shoving animal parts into herself and pretending to labor them out and doing it so much and so hastily so as not to be caught that she lost track of what she was even putting in there. She stored parts in her pockets so that when the doctor took one set away, she could refill herself. She says, some she brought in a pocket handkerchief, and some in a hog's bladder, which I commonly burnt, but sometimes, being in a great hurry and afraid of being catched, I don't know, but I might have put up some of the bladders at some time or other. The confession seems to switch between first and third person, suggesting that at least some of it was crafted by a third party. It could be that the person taking her confession switched perspectives unintentionally. It has the effect of making an already very confusing piece of writing even more confusing. But basically, a parade of doctors came in and continued delivering pieces of animals. She got her period in the middle of all this, which for some reason didn't put an end to the whole scam. Then again, if a woman is giving birth to animal parts, who's to say she wouldn't also be getting her period at the same time? At some point in this, she claims someone promised her a pension. She brings up money and getting paid quite a few times. The scissor lady promised to continue to bring her parts once Mary was moved to London, but said she should wait a while before delivering more parts, that way she would get more money. The woman told me before I came up, I should not put up any rabbits for some time, otherwise I should not get so much money. I believe she first tried to pass off the porter's delivery of the rabbit as just being for her to eat. This confession ends in the third person with, she clears her mother-in-law, her husband, her sister, and everybody but that woman from knowing anything about this cheat, which she is heartily sorry for. I asked her if her fits were real or counterfeit. She answered she had been subject to fits all her life to a greater degree. Strangers, Smalls is back. Listen, whatever you do, don't tell anyone that sometimes you fantasize about finding a litter of kittens under your porch. People do not like that. I found that out the hard way. But what you can find out the easy way is that cats love Smalls cat food because their protein-packed recipes are made with preservative-free ingredients you'd find in your fridge. And it's delivered right to your door. That's why Cats.com named Smalls their best overall cat food. You know I don't have a cat. Yet. I'm still trying to convince my husband. But you don't have to take my word for it. Smalls cat food customer Elizabeth C. said, my cat was always so-so with her usual food, but she is very enthusiastic about Smalls. Her breath is much better and she poops much less frequently and it does not smell disgusting like it used to. What are you waiting for? Give your cat the food they deserve. For a limited time, because you're a Strange and Unexplained listener, get 60% off your first order plus free shipping when you head to smalls.com/strange. One last time, that's 60% off your first order plus free shipping when you head to smalls.com/strange. The very next day, Mary changed her tune slightly in a second confession. This time, there was no scissors lady. She describes a protracted miscarriage and once again her mother-in-law and Dr. Howard delivering parts of something. About a quarter of an hour after she called for the pot, into which a liver and guts came away. I felt a pain like a pricking of bones within me, which continued for an hour or more, after which my mother brought away some part of a monster which she said was the trunk of the body. About 1 hour or more after she brought away, which I think they said was part of a leg or thigh, soon after she brought away some pieces of flesh without any bone. In the nighttime, she brought away little pieces of flesh. In the morning, Mr. Howard came to see, then a great pain and flooding, and this time he took away a piece of flesh and said there was no more, saying he was better convinced than he was before, now he had done it himself. More parts were delivered, and Mary describes being in tremendous pain throughout. Mary claims that when she would walk, more parts would fall out of her. This continued for weeks. It was 3 weeks before all the monster came away. All night before the head came away, only grinding pains. But in the morning, my mother, upon examining, put me to so much pain that I thought something would run through me. She said she felt something, but it was not ready to come away, but she could not reach it so much as to be able to bring it away. I am so much now ashamed to tell you the truth after I have told so many lies. And here she admits to lying about the scissors lady. There was no such thing as a woman advising me to any such thing, nor never brought me any rabbits. Mary, it seems, continued to deliver parts with the aid of her mother-in-law and Dr. Howard. Howard then brought in neighbors to see for themselves. I have no idea why. And whether or not Mary was in on the ruse, she was then subjected to strangers sticking their hands up her vagina and pulling out animal parts. Mr. Howard had touched me just before Mr. Ayliss came and asked if I felt anything or if anything moved. I said yes, and then Mr. Ayliss touched me and said there was something, but instead of taking it away, he punched it further. On Mr. Howard saying, "Why don't you take it away?" he answered, "She must have had another pain first. And when I had a pain, he took it away." In case that was impossible to understand, some rando guy that Dr. Howard brought in was invited to put his hand inside Mary, at which time he said he did feel something inside her vagina, but rather than pulling it out, he apparently pushed it farther in. She then explains that when San Andre and Sir Manningham both came to examine her, nothing was inside her to deliver. It was only after Dr. Howard examined her again that she would deliver another whatever it was. Mary's third and final confession was taken by Dr. Douglas on December 12th. In this one, she once again introduces a mysterious woman who proposed the scheme to Mary as a way to make money. She describes the process by which she ordered rabbits, ostensibly to eat, and then put the uneaten parts up herself to be miraculously delivered when the time was right. This confession also includes vivid descriptions of the pain she endured from sticking animal bones up herself. 2 days after she put up the underjaw, that was like to tear me to pieces, it was so jagged. Then forced her to take it out again. After she was gone home, it put me to so much pain that one of the neighbors was forced to take it out again. My mother said she was glad that it was taken away, and then put up the skull and the two cheeks together, which threw me into violent floodings. The neighbors advised me to Mr. Howard. I was all night in a most violent rack and torture, who came about 5 in the morning. I said I was ready to be torn to pieces, the bone are ready to come through me. Mary was arrested, and the local papers got to work exposing her scheme. Her signed deposition was printed in all the local papers, and social media influencers of the time, that is, writers who distributed pamphlets on current events, made hay of the whole affair. One such pamphlet was titled Much Ado About Nothing, or A Plain Refutation of All That Has Been Written or Said Concerning the Rabbit Woman of Godalming, being a full and impartial confession from her own mouth and under her own hand of the whole affair from the beginning to the end, now made public for the general satisfaction. Mary was charged as a notorious and vile cheat, which was apparently a formal charge back then. Crowds jeered at her as she was led to prison. Satirists, songwriters, and other content creators turned Mary's story into fodder for their art. The famed writer Jonathan Swift, author of Gulliver's Travels, which had come out in 1726, using the pseudonym Lemuel Gulliver, wrote The Anatomist Dissected, or The Man Midwife Finally Brought to Bed, a searing critique of St. Andre's credulity. In a mock scientific tone, this pamphlet imagines dissecting St. Andre's character and implies he was either incredibly stupid or complicit. Another pamphleteer under the name Thomas Braithwaite, surgeon, wrote Remarks on a Short Narrative of an Extraordinary Delivery of Rabbits, taking apart St. Andre's pamphlet point by point and ridiculing his conclusions. Don't forget, St. Andre, a doctor, had written a paper claiming that Mary had given birth to rabbits because she had been dreaming about rabbits. He was a doctor. A medical doctor. And while Mary suffered the consequences by serving a sentence in prison, these medical professionals who attended to her and been convinced that a human woman gave birth to rabbit parts suffered the battering of ridicule from their colleagues. As one medical journal stated a few years after the incident, quote, "Who can remember without shame the appalling credulity brought to light in 1727 when all London was convulsed to know whether Mary Toft, a poor and hysterical woman living at Godalming, did or did not give birth to rabbits? The belief was fostered by John Howard, her medical attendant, as well as by Nathaniel St. Andre, an unqualified surgeon who held the post of court anatomist," end quote. An unqualified person holding a top governmental post? Why, I never. Strangers, have you heard that more people now consume cannabis than alcohol? Maybe it's because there's no hangover? Whatever the reason, Cornbread Hemp just launched these incredible THC seltzers and people are raving. I gave some to my buddy Tracy and the reviews are in. Not only are they delicious, with four flavors to choose from, blueberry breeze, peach iced tea, raspberry limeade, and salted watermelon, but they make her feel great and she doesn't wake up the next day feeling awful. You all know that I can't do THC, but with Cornbread Hemp CBD gummies, I can get the edge taken off without the high. It's perfect for me. If melatonin leaves you with weird dreams and next day grogginess, try the melatonin-free CBD sleep gummies from Cornbread Hemp. They're a natural way to wind down without relying on over-the-counter sleep aids. Plus, they're vegan, gluten-free, and made without a sugar coating. Just clean, natural ingredients. Right now, Strange and Unexplained listeners can save 30% off their first order and enjoy free shipping on orders over $75. Head to cornbreadhemp.com/strange and use code STRANGE at checkout. That's cornbreadhemp.com/strange, code STRANGE. Cornbread Hemp, this is the good life. In January 1727, a London physician named James Blondel published The Strength of Imagination in Pregnant Women Examined, directly challenging the very idea that imagination could cause birth defects. Blondel's work was part of the broader fallout debate. Many in the medical field realized they needed to harden their scientific skepticism. Blondel slyly dedicated the book to Mother Ludlum, a local Surrey witch of folklore, implying that only superstition, not science, could explain belief in Mary's claims. 2 years later, Blondell was still on his crusade, and rightly so, publishing another piece, this one titled The Power of the Mother's Imagination Over the Fetus Examined, in which he stated, quote, "The opinion that marks and deformities in children arise from maternal imagination demonstrated to be a vulgar error," end quote. However, old habits die hard, and women will be forever blamed for everything bad. More than 100 years after Blondell's warning, Joseph Merrick wrote The Elephant Man, in which the titular character is born with major skeletal deformities, which grant him his nickname, and about which the main character says, quote, "The deformity which I am now exhibiting was caused by my mother being frightened by an elephant. My mother was going along the street when a procession of animals was passing by. There was a terrible crush of people to see them, and unfortunately, she was pushed under the elephant's feet, which frightened her very much. This, occurring during a time of pregnancy, was the cause of my deformity," end quote. Note how even being crushed by the elephant isn't the cause of the deformity. It's her reaction to being crushed by the elephant. If only she could have been more chill about getting crushed by an elephant. Mary's prison sentence was very short. She served less than a year and then largely disappeared from the public eye. But her failed magic trick of pulling rabbits from her proverbial hat had a lasting impact on medicine. Minds and attitudes began to change about pregnancy and whether or not the morality of the pregnant woman affects the fetus. Who knows why Mary Toft perpetuated this grisly hoax? It could be that she was so traumatized by the miscarriage that she lost the ability to think clearly. It could be she had somehow convinced herself she didn't even have the miscarriage and was still pregnant and then needed something to show for it. There are plenty of stories of women convincing themselves that they're pregnant so much that their bodies begin showing signs of pregnancy. It could be that extreme poverty drove her to make a really poor choice in the hopes of riches. She mentioned someone from the king's court promising her a pension. Ironically, while she was laboring that whole time, she was being housed and fed and cared for in a way she never had before in her life. So I suppose in that regard, it worked. Something that strikes me about all of this is that when I work with pregnant people in my role as a doula, or even just a casual support person, I always urge the pregnant person to try to reduce their stress, because I actually do believe, and science backs me up, that high levels of cortisol during pregnancy may have some adverse effects on the fetus. We know that cortisol levels affect breast milk, too. Obviously, it's impossible to tell anyone these days not to stress out. Being awake is stressful. But studies are showing that mindfulness and meditation have positive impacts on pregnancy. There are lots of ailments that women and uterus-bearing folk are not responsible for. For example, the so-called male loneliness epidemic. But insofar as we are stewards for the humans we might decide or be forced to carry inside our bodies, we can try to offer them the calm we wish we had for ourselves. It's a tall order, I know, and I'm not suggesting you can't look at a picture of a bear while you're having sex or lust after a statue while you're pregnant. Look and lust away. And for the love of Mary Stuart Masterson, if you have a fever, take fucking Tylenol. It's just that when you start to feel yourself spinning out over all the legitimately awful things going on, take a few deep breaths and remember that what you're doing is ancient and sacred and beautiful, and wash that fetus in some well-deserved oxytocin. Actually, whether or not you're pregnant, you should do that. You deserve it. Mary Toft deserved it too. Next time on Strange and Unexplained, we will explore the prodigal life and mysterious disappearance of Barbara Newhall Follett. This episode was written by me, Daisy Egan, with research by Becky Berger, sound engineering by Jeff Devine, music by Epidemic and Blue Dot Sessions. If you have an idea for an episode, head to our website, strangeandunexplainedpod.com, and fill out the contact form. I will write back. Grab Bag is an all-female and non-binary-owned profit-share network where our contributors get to keep ownership of their shows. We strive to give a platform to those who might not be able to land themselves on a bigger network. Who knows? Maybe you have a podcast idea you'd like to pitch to Grab Bag. We've got live recordings, watch parties, book clubs, and more. Why there's so much going on over at Grab Bag, you'll wonder if we missed the memo on how capitalism works. Join me on Instagram at SNUPod, Daisy Egan, and Grab Bag Collab, or head to the Facebook page to join in the conversation. If you like the show, please visit a sponsor with our unique code, give us a quick review and 5 stars, subscribe and download, and tell a friend. Stay strange.